Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kendall Roden, Cynthia Krang, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilik, Russell Young, and Sajid DeMello discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please visit our website at azpodcast.com.
Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 226, being recorded on the 25th of April, 2018, with special guest Thuru Vijaykumar. I'm Sajid, and in Skype with me, I have Evan, Russell, Kendall, and of course, our special guest, Thuru. And we're going to get to Thuru in just a minute. But before that, let's just talk about some updates in the Azure space. And I know also, even before we get to that, Evan, I know you kind of slipped it in a while ago about your build trip. Do you want to just maybe talk a little bit more about it?
Yeah, sure. So for the audience, there's a couple of us that are going to be, actually, I guess three of us in total, are going to be at Build doing some live interviews there. It's a great opportunity to, get out and see customers. Actual end customers will be there, right? This is an external Build, the Build 2018 conference that we hold. If any of our listeners are there and want to come by and introduce yourself, right, we'll be around. I don't know exactly yet, if we'll also have a spot we can hang out that we can say, hey, we'll be here, intermittently. But definitely if you see us around, please say hi, say hi and let us know you're a regular listener. Always great to meet you in person.
Yeah, that would be great. Russell's going to be there, Kale, Evan, and Russell, who's the other your colleague who's going to also?
Yeah, I'm bringing a colleague who's called Mark Bloodworth, and he manages the Technical Evangelist team. So that's a team of guys that were from the old DX organization, if you remember what that was, the developer experience. Yep, so he's coming over to kind of give some more support in your absence.
Okay, awesome.
Takes multiples of us to replace you, Sajid. So
definitely. No, that sounds like a great opportunity, and do us proud. Okay, so let's get started with the updates. Thanks for putting all those in the show notes. Evan? What do you want to start with there?
I'm going to go to my two mainstays. For Azure SQL Database, we've got TDE, Transparent Data Encryption. An enhancement where now customers can provide their own keys, right? It used to be you had to leverage our kind of internal key infrastructure. And then also the Azure DDoS Azure DDoS protection is generally available, right? This is basically pushing the DDoS protection we have for the platform up to a layer where it can also help protect customer workloads. That's definitely on the list. We've got to get somebody on to talk about.
Yeah, and I was reading about that. I don't know. I always thought that that was already in place. So
no,
I'm surprised.
It's kind of one of the. I don't want to say it's a secret because we don't hide it. But the problem is that the level we're protecting the platform, mm-hmm. right? Obviously, along with that comes protection for customers. But lots of customer applications, right, aren't built for the scale that Azure is across its across the platform. And so something that can push over an individual, customer's application, web app, VMs, whatever, is really still relatively small compared to the broad Azure platform,
mm-hmm.
right? And so that was always the disconnect, is we just weren't able to kind of narrowly scale that to be able to go after just something that's going after a particular set of deployments.
Oh, I see.
And so now we've layered on the ability to kind of add that more targeted thing, right? Because, for the sake of conversation, right, if, let's say, 100% of X is enough to tip Azure over.
Right.
Well, it might only take 0.1% of that to trip over a particular customer workload.
Right.
Right. If it's specifically targeted at the customer workload. So yeah. So this is extending that up to that layer. There's a couple different layers of protection, both paid and unpaid. With different functionality. But yeah, definitely a missing piece that we've had for a long time. That's great to have.
That's cool. Great. And Kendall, anything you want to add to the list?
Yeah, so just the ability to programmatically create Azure subscriptions using APIs is now available, and I think that's just great because as we see a lot of customers who are adopting the cloud and who are creating new subscriptions frequently, typically right now they have to go through a process that requires, you know, reaching out to a central IT group within the organization and provisioning a new enterprise subscription. And so I think it'll be really nice to be able to kind of programmatically control more of that at a granular level so that we can get more people adopting Azure and using it more frequently, especially these larger enterprises. So I think we'll continue to see an expansion of the ability to control your subscriptions and reactivate and deactivate and things of that nature through the API as they continue to build that out. And I think that'll be great. And it's a good move in the right direction.
Yeah, I know my customer has like something like 70 or 75 subscriptions. And this is something that they would definitely look at because they have to do that manually, as you said today, and doing it in an automated way as part of some sort of a workflow they already have would be a big plus.
Exactly, yeah, for sure.
All right. Russell, anything you like?
The one that caught my eye was something that's not actually there yet, but they're just giving us a little bit of a preview of it. I've tried to find it in the portal, but I couldn't find it myself. But under the policy tab, they're adding the ability to provide a lot of support and help for you to be able to respond to GDPR requests. So obviously GDPR is not the most the topic that most people want to talk about at the moment, but the date is looming. So it's 25th of May is when it's going to kick in, and by that point this feature will be in there and it will all be in place. But this feature is there to kind of handle user requests. So part of GDPR says that anybody who's storing customer data, that customer is allowed to come and request for you to export to them whatever data you're holding on it. They've got the right to be forgotten, so to be able to delete and what have you. And this feature within the portal allows you to go and look at those requests and act upon them. So it will go through and scan through some logs that you've not been able to do automatically before. So I thought that's a really interesting feature and nice the way that they're integrating that.
And what does GDPR stand for? That's an acronym of some sort, right?
I should know. General Data Protection
Regulation.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, I was trying to remember what that was.
TLA's just become TLA's after a while, and you forget what the original meaning was.
Yeah. I mean, this is a huge deal in Europe, right? And it's having some, you know, ancillary effects, you know, within the rest of the world. But, you know, in places like this where you see, like, core services like Azure, we have to meet that compliance. So now the whole world gets it. Because Europe is pushing for it, so
I mean, it's going to affect everybody. No getting away from it.
I saw a couple in there that I was pretty excited about. Of course, there's Azure Service Fabric there, one of my favorite topics. This is actually, you know, it's easy to kind of let this one slip by. It says that the title is Announcing Reliable Services on Linux, right? It seems pretty innocent on the top, but you know, reliable services in Azure, in Service Fabric in general, is one of the most complicated parts of Service Fabric. That's the part that lets you have reliable collections, which means, you know, the collections are distributed, they're always made available, etc. It's a very complicated part of Service Fabric, and for them to bring that to Linux is a huge deal. And so I'm really happy to see that. And of course, along with that, they've also had support for Red Hat Enterprise version of Linux. So that's one good dev-related update that I saw. And another one, which is should make the Java folks happy, is when you use Java and you have to connect to Cosmos DB, which is our popular NoSQL database, you can use the Java or SDK for Cosmos DB. It's there, and it's really good. We've written some samples for it. But most Java developers use the Spring framework as a framework to build applications. And that Spring framework has the facility to use, something similar to the Entity framework, right? Like a data mapping layer in Spring framework. And for that, you need a provider. And now they've provided that Cosmos DB Spring data provider, which lets them hook the Spring the Spring data model into Cosmos DB directly, so that Java applications can access Cosmos DB without actually knowing it's a Cosmos DB database under the covers. It's just, you know, they're just accessing the Spring data API, and it just under the covers gets mapped to Cosmos DB transparently.
So. Yeah, that's a nice one. I mean, just a quick question for Evan, really. I mean, I've always been a SQL fan and always use SQL, but you know, recently I've been delving into Cosmos, exploring the graph data and some of the NoSQL features that you got in there, and I'm really a big fan of Cosmos DB now. So I was just wondering, Evan, if you've had a play with it and what you think of it.
I started to work on something. You know, I was kind of playing off the DocDB capabilities. I don't have a ton of NoSQL depth. It looks, I mean, that definitely falls in the category of the next app that I do, rather than by default jumping over to a relational database, which is my typical behavior, right? I'm going to try and layer it on top because that feels like the way to go long term. You know, it just like, then you just don't have to care and I don't have to worry about replication, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I'm pretty impressed with the product from what I've looked at. I don't have a whole lot of experience coding it.
Yeah, okay. I think I'm kind of in a hybrid mode at the moment, so I tend to go to SQL by default still. But then there's certain bits of the data where I just think actually NoSQL fits this a lot better, and then you kind of add that to your applications as a separate data store, but integrate the two together. Yeah, interesting.
Yep. Cool. Anything else you guys want to pick up, Evan?
I think let's get on to API management, I think, at this point.
Okay, I think we've covered quite a bit. All right, well, let's turn over to our special guest, Thuru. Thuru, thanks so much for making the time to join us. And interestingly, Thuru reached out to us, actually through my LinkedIn page. He reached out to us. He found our name on the website and contacted me on LinkedIn. And I saw some of his background. It was very interesting. So we invited him to talk on the show because he does have specialty in a number of Azure related topics, which we'll get to one of them today. But Thuru, please go ahead and introduce yourself. Let us know the company that you work for and what your passion is in the Azure space.
Thanks for having me. So I'm Thuru, working for a software services company called Tikri. So it's headquarters in Singapore, and mainly we have the client base from Scandinavia and European countries and Australia. And I'm Azure MVP and have written two books about Azure. Yeah, so that's a very short introduction. So I have been working in the .NET and Azure space for almost last 6 years now.
That's awesome. And I know that being an Azure MVP is not a trivial task. You have to, show you're really good at it, and you have to do it every year. Is that, or every 2 years? How often do you have to get renewed for that?
It's every year, annually.
Yeah, so it's quite a big deal. So that's really great. So give us some idea of some of the areas that you feel like you're passionate about in the Azure space. And Azure is a big space these days. It's taken us many episodes to go through all the Azure stuff, and we still haven't finished yet. So it's a really big area. Do you have any specific areas that you feel really passionate about in the Azure space?
So mostly I've been working on the PaaS side of the Azure more than the infrastructure side, so because I'm working as a technology architect for Tikri.
Okay.
And mostly deal with the startups and SMEs, especially in Norway and Sweden, majorly. So I have been working, as you mentioned, Cosmos API management, web apps, SQL databases, and recently we have been working on a huge project which is built on, we are trying to build on Service Fabric.
Oh.
So the technology, it ranges, and mostly now customers are looking forward to Azure, mostly for the PaaS capabilities it provides, and they want to boost the productivity, and serverless is also gaining a bit of popularity among some customers.
Okay. Now, how do you factor in API management into the discussion when you talk to customers? Like, because, you know, that's, I mean, I doubt customers actually ask for API management, right? They need some kind of a solution, and then you figure, okay, API management can help them. So how do you factor that in?
Yeah, exactly. Like in my experience, actually, it comes into two different cases. Like one is like when we put a platform strategy for a customer. So if they have a legacy application and they want to launch it outside to bring innovation in, mostly that's quite the business case these days, because if you have a lot of data which you don't know how to use it, or you want to welcome external developers into your organization ecosystem. So that's one of the areas where we put an API strategy and we layered the legacy applications and the modern endpoints together and expose it through API management. Other thing is actually when the usage of microservices, especially coupled with Service Fabric, so we expose as an aggregated composite gateway to the consuming applications. It's a mobile or the web applications. Those two are the highest use cases where we look for API management from a solutions point of view.
Okay. I mean, I think the first one that you mentioned is kind of the most obvious solution, right? Just taking
exactly.
an existing
so most
API.
Obvious solution. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, but the second one is very interesting. So could we kind of dive into that second option a little bit? Can you explain some of that, the idea behind, enabling microservices using API management? I think that's the way you put it.
Yeah, so there are different patterns. Actually, mostly we prefer, from a solution architecture point of view, we prefer having a gateway. But there are rare incidents you can still use microservices without a gateway. The reason why we use, or mostly most of the architects prefer API gateway products is like we can handle lots of cross-cutting concerns like caching and the security or pre-authentication layer based on API management policies. And because Azure API management has a very granular level policy templates where even we can inject C# code into that, and we can have policies to the endpoint, to the all the way up to the product level. So that really helps, because when it comes to microservice architecture, sometimes you have to wait for the results from two different services, or you have to do a model transformation from different services, or you have to composite results from different services. So either you have to build your code which does this, or you can just enable this by using policy templates. So it's quick to mock some services, and also it's centralized management. So from that aspect, we use API management in microservices.
All right. So you're saying you can do this combination of various microservices without having to write any code or much code. Is that what you just said?
Yeah. When it comes to the manipulating the results, compositing them, or transforming them from technical point of view, from a model to service contract transformations. So those things are very quite straightforward. We can just achieve them using policy templates without writing any code and going through all the pain points of writing the code, deploying that to a place. So it's just a centralized pass level management. So you have a easy editable XML based template and you can achieve those things.
Okay. What about performance and all? When I hear what you just said, I always worry, like, what happens if you get a whole lot of requests? I mean, that's a lot of processing that has to be done, right? Is the system able to handle like a sudden burst of requests and things like how do you work that into the design?
So there are two aspects. Like, one is actually we control the request-based security levels, like where the API management has, everything is mostly handled by the policy definitions. So we enable throttling and we enable the scalability based on the request. When it comes to composition of the results set, so the real bottleneck is not actually comes at the API management layer. It actually comes from the individual service which gives that result. So API management is quite performant and well suitable for high scale scenarios. And normally we do proper caching on the gateway level. So the bottleneck is actually, most of the cases, the bottleneck depends on those individual services. Say that particular service needs to fetch the data from a low-level IO persistence layer, then that becomes the bottleneck of giving that throughput back to the client. And it very rarely happens at the gateway level.
So that raises an interesting question. I mean, like, if you could give, so like that overarching statement, which is generally performance issues are the back-end service, right? That's true in a lot of scenarios. With load balancers or other PaaS services in front. Is there a specific signature that you would say to customers, hey, if you see X, you're now in the fringe scenario of it is API management, or flip it around, would you just say, hey, never start with the API management side, always assume it's your app until you prove differently? Like, what's your recommendation there?
We can't actually say like start with an API management, but from a performance point of view, it is not the real bottleneck of using an API management or not. But from a solution, when we are developing a few things, because different customers have a different requirement, so it's not always recommended to start with a gateway level. So because sometimes we need to mock that, and sometimes the service contracts are not defined properly. So in those cases, doing an API management, and it goes through lots of churns. And maybe you have to control the versioning at the gateway level or at the service level, or you have to just to change your client applications very often. So in that case, we normally don't put the API management on the very first level of a development. But from a performance point of view, it doesn't matter, because most of the times having an API management, theoretically, it's another layer in between your service and the consumer. So in a theoretical point of view, it should add a latency. But in terms of the caching and the throughput that we can gain from Azure network, so it won't be much of an issue in terms of performance.
Okay, so good. No, that's good guidance.
Go ahead, Russell.
You're getting an advantage from the abstraction, I guess, as far as the architecture goes. So you can then start making changes in the API management part without changing your back end, or you can change the back end independently if you like, I guess. But I thought one of the big use cases for API management, and one of the big things that people are drawn to it for, is for monetizing. Is that a scenario that you see quite a lot with your customers?
Yes, exactly. So in the platform strategy, like one of the customers love, how we handle this actually, because they want to welcome the external mobile developers to their ecosystem. So they have a huge database, with terabytes of data, so they don't know how to make them available because they lack the internal mobile development skills. So that's, we used this API management to do the monetization. And we welcome the external mobile developers into their organizational ecosystem. So in that way, it really helped, because it comes with a very rich developer portal as well. So it's very easy, because most of the heavy lifting is packaged within the API management. It does not only provide a gateway service, it just provides the supporting developer experience as well. So it's really great.
Yeah, and I think that in itself is a massive blessing. The amount of work or effort you have to put into managing those developers, the third-party developers, if you've got to build that yourself, that's quite a big task.
And I do recall from a previous discussion we had on API management that another common use case is to use a hybrid connection with API management, right? Where API management is your quote-unquote internet presence, and then you have some sort of express route or something else that goes on premises, and that's where your actual data may sit. Have you seen that a lot? What's your what do customers normally have in terms of topology?
Yeah, so from the topology, actually, that's what normally we always try to achieve, because we try to hide the backend services from the public internet. So either we put the API gateway as public facing, and we do a VNet and host the backend services in a VM, or sometimes we connect back all the way to the on-prem. So that's one of the topological benefits we get from having an API gateway.
And I guess in those scenarios, then the performance of the express route and all is going to come, or whatever, via remote connection, that's going to come into play in a big time, right?
The network plays sometimes a bit of a bad role there, particularly if...
Hey, wait a minute. Don't be pointing at the network here, people. Never the network. No, sorry. That was my support persona kicking out real quick.
But you mentioned a few times that you use caching. So how do you kind of set that up so that it can lessen the load on the network, you know, on this remote network connection?
It's actually in the gateway, it has an inbuilt cache where you can enable per endpoint or per API. Yeah. But that's like the very first level of caching that we try to get. But sometimes in one of the scenarios, what we are trying to achieve using the service fabric application that we have been developing is we put different layers of caching. One first level of is in the API gateway, and the second is an object caching in the .NET code itself, and then it talks to an actor, a stateful actor in the service fabric, and then it all the way goes to the database. So it's like a PROS architecture, L1, L2, L3, so all the way kind of a caching. It's mostly comes with the problem and the problem in hand and how we want to solve. So we put caching as different layers.
Okay, that makes sense. Any tips and tricks that you think you might have for our listeners in, you know, if they're getting out to use API management and to avoid any obvious bad practices?
One of the very common bad practices that I have noticed in two cases is like when exposing the backend services, say that your backend service is running on an Azure API app, and then we plug it with the API management just to get another benefits of any cross-cutting concerns or whatever. So most of the times what the developers do is they forget that still the API app can be reached by the public internet. And they rely on the APIM subscription key, which is goes through the API gateway, and they tend to see actually that is secure because my API can only be accessed through with this API key. But one of the points that they forget is actually the backend service is still open to the public internet. So that actually I have noticed two such cases in production, and we have to immediately put the measures to stop that. So API gateway is not a comprehensive security solution because it just provides a cross-cutting layer, because security needs to be considered more serious because putting an API gateway doesn't give the solution for the security.
Okay. And so in that scenario, then how would you lock down that API, that app, API app, for example? Otherwise,
yeah. So what we did was actually we put the API app into the VNet, and then we just connected the API management to the VNet. But mostly that what we recommend is having a certificate mutual authentication between the API and the backend service.
Got it. Good one.
So I have one more question for you, if you don't mind. I'll jump in here. Thanks for all you shared. That's actually really interesting. I've been working with APIs for a while now, and I know that this has been really helpful to me. But one thing I'm curious about is you've been working in the Azure space, as you said, for 6 years, and you casually dropped that you had written 2 books. That's amazing. Congratulations. But in terms of how API management has evolved, have you seen a lot of changes and modifications that are being made iteratively? Have you seen things that were, you know, maybe not as intuitive before that have improved? What are some of the areas that you've seen this solution really grow in as you've been working in it?
So I remember the API management, which came, if I remember right, it was acquired by API Fanny, some company. It's acquired by Microsoft and it became API management. It was having the old user experience, and the recent times it's been the most of the experience is moved to the new portal. And the experience from that portal management and how we can set the security aspects of it has changed. And I think there are policies, and the recent great addition is the policy context variable, where you can inject your custom C# scripts into the policy templates, and you can customize. So that's one of the greatest thing which has been added recently. So from a development point of view, that's like one of the very powerful features.
Awesome. Thank you. I'll have to look into that. It's exciting.
And can you just use C# only, or do they have like JavaScript or Node.js as well there?
The syntax is very much similar to C# because it just gives you the request response context variable, and you can manipulate it. It's not the pure C#, but the syntax is very similar to C#.
I see. It's just like their own language kind of thing. Okay.
Not exactly, because it just gives the feeling of being, in some cases, it just gives you the feeling of writing an ASP.NET code, request.http context.header, so those kind of things you can do. Yeah. So it's very similar to C# and
awesome. Well, this has been great. Is there anything else that you'd like to share with us, Thuru?
So I just have, because this is one of the concerns that we have been like, when the customers like ask, we've been checking, because the recently the serverless has been sort of catching up, and the customers are sort of excited, what is that, and can we put it in our project, and so also all sort of stuff. So one thing is like the function proxies, and how it just goes hand in hand with API management, or it seems like it can replace API management in certain cases, because in the cost point of view, it's quite cheaper than API management. So that's one of the things that I have been seeing recently, but it doesn't include all the features that API management has. It's just a pure gateway where you can manipulate your request and response, where API management is a full-fledged API management solution with developer experience and stuff. So I just have sort of clarifications maybe from you guys. So like what would be the future of Azure Function Proxy? So is there anything planned from Microsoft point of view to add those kind of things to the serverless? So it just remains as a gateway.
Go ahead, Evan.
I was gonna say that's a good question. I suspect that's probably for like Nir or somebody that we've had
on the past. But yeah, Nir did talk about that. I recall now that he kind of spent some time talking about this sort of like a lighter version of API management, right? That's the way he described it. And that's exactly what Thuru was talking about. So you know, they're obviously, because it's kind of free, right? You're not really paying for that. It's not going to be as full-fledged as the support that you have in API management. I mean, all the security aspects, the cross-cutting concerns, etc. Those are all you need API management for that. But for starting off, for developers that want to just need a simpler API kind of layer, that might suffice. And I think it's a good thing that they added that in there. But again, just want to be clear that. That is not meant to replace API management in any way. Yeah. I do have a problem with API management sometimes. I feel it is too expensive. I think I've made that known before as well.
I think you mentioned it to Nir.
I mentioned it to the PM. Hopefully he didn't take it against me. So this is definitely a good low-cost or no-cost feature in functions. I am glad you brought that up, Thuru. I don't think they're going to, they're not going to, make it as full-fledged, but I'm sure they'll kind of keep it up with whatever the most common aspects of API management are required as it relates to functions, right? I mean, that whole thing is related to functions. And so if there are some things in there, I'm pretty sure that they're going to enhance that part of the gateway there.
I think if you recall, API apps as part of app services, we went down this route initially because I think the API management was quite a separate product, and it had its own life, and that was separate from the API apps life that was coming through. And the two products were competing to some extent. And I think while API apps were still in preview, they kind of realized, actually, where do we stop with this, and where do the two things cross over?
Right.
And there was a big re-architecture of the API apps piece. And I think they removed some of the gateway functionality that was built into there and kind of decided, okay, there's a point here where it now makes sense to have API management as a separate product versus using API apps and what's built in there. And I think the same thing applies with functions, but on a serverless level. And I think there are certain features within API management that kind of makes sense and justify the cost as well. So if you are going to monetize and you need that developer portal, you want to manage third-party companies, then the cost is pretty insignificant to what you could be getting back in terms of transactional cost that you can gain by making your data available or by allowing third-party development companies to build new products and add new features to your own platform. And it's the way of the world these days, isn't it? So it's the way in which a lot of companies work. Just all the add-ons to Facebook and all these other platforms that each create their own money systems, basically.
Well put, Russell. That's correct. Yeah. Well, did you say you were in Singapore now? Is that what you said?
No, our company's headquarters in Singapore, so normally I travel Singapore to Norway, Germany. So the main the customer base is European. I do travel. But...
So are you based out of right now? Are you based out of Europe or Singapore when you're doing this show?
Based in Colombo, Sri Lanka, but mostly I travel Europe very often.
Okay, I'm just going to say it's probably very early in the morning for you. So, well, it's very early in the morning for you, so appreciate you taking the time. It's like very, very early. So thank you very much for coming on. Appreciate it. And some really good insight and things for our listeners to take away regarding API management and other topics. So thank you. If you have any links or the information you want to share about your company or stuff with some of the books that you've written, please send me the links and we'll put them along with the show notes.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. Great. I'll just catch you with the email.
All right. Thanks a lot. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.